If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
It's Friday, and Friday means Q&A. Welcome to the Radical Personal Finance Podcast, the show dedicated to providing you with the knowledge, skills, insight, and encouragement you need to live a rich and meaningful life now while building a plan for financial freedom in 10 years or less. My name is Joshua Sheets, and I am your host. And today, this is kind of like a radio show. You got phone lines, you got callers, and you got a host behind a microphone. So a little bit of live Q&A today. Right now, I have two callers waiting on the line, and so we'll see if anybody else calls in as we get started. But it works just like a live call-in show for a radio, and the way to get notified about these shows is I've been doing these shows exclusively for patrons, patrons of the show, where I put it out on the Patreon page, and I let patrons know that that we can call in and do a Friday Q&A show. But the last two times that I put that out, I have had zero participation from patrons. I guess all the patrons have all their questions answered because I've done such a good job in other places, right? So today I put it out to the email list, so I've got a couple of callers called in on the email list. So basically, and I've also in the past, in a previous one, when my Patreon participation was low, I put this in the Radical Personal Finance Facebook community group. So if you're not connected with me on the email list, and also if you're not connected in the Radical Personal Finance Facebook community, or if you're not a patron of the show, you're basically not getting any of these notifications. But if you're in those things, so from time to time, you might get something nice like this live Q&A show. Quick note on the email list, by the way. One of my commitments was to do a better job with that, and I utterly failed for a while. But those of you who are subscribed to the email list will have noticed that I've gotten better at that, and that's my number one priority right now, is to do a good job communicating via email. And so I'll be sharing a lot of personal stuff through the email. I'll be trying to make that really valuable. So if you have any interest in receiving emails from me, especially really good ones, then come on by and subscribe to the Radical Personal Finance email list. I would be glad to have you there. Our first caller today is Zach, calling in from Illinois. Zach, go ahead and introduce yourself and let me know what you'd like to talk about today, please.
Hi. So I'd like to talk about if you were a 13-year-old like me and you wanted to become a financial advisor, knowing what you know now, what you would tell me I should be doing right now to kind of prepare for that?
That is a brilliant question. So you're 13 years old and you are interested in becoming a financial advisor. When would you like to start working as a financial advisor?
So in your show, when you're talking about getting a bachelor's degree by 18, that's what I'm working on. So hopefully sometime right around that time.
Okay. And when you think of the term financial advisor, what does that mean as far as what type of business are you interested in? What type of areas are you interested in working in?
Probably like just helping people with their money to be able to like find out what they want and how to get there. I don't know like specifically who I'd want to work with since mm-hmm. I'm only 13. Like,
sure.
I don't have experience like being an adult.
Right. Well, I applaud you for calling in, and I hope that my son someday, when he's 13 years old, is calling somebody smart and asking them good questions like that. So I applaud you for that. Here are a couple of ideas for you. A couple more questions just to clarify, though. Would you be interested in working now as an advisor of some kind, or is this something in the future that you only want to do in the future? Are you too busy where you can't do anything now, or is this something where you'd be interested in getting into it now?
That'd be really cool to get into it right now, but I don't know how that would be.
Right. Possible. Right. Right. So here's kind of the challenge of trying to figure things out. The first challenge that you have to do is you've got to develop a skill set that's going to help somebody. So there are many different types of financial advisors, and there are some things that are easy to do and some things that are not easy to do. And you got to figure out based upon what can you do that's going to build a skill set. So here are a couple of ideas and ways to approach it. The first thing is to start with the simplest of financial skills that you can develop and market. And in my mind, I think that would be the skill of bookkeeping. Your challenge as a 13-year-old is the same challenge, except worse, that I faced when I was 23 years old. And I started in the business when I was 23 years old, and underneath my massive red beard, I have a baby face, and I look very young for my age. And so take that and multiply it times way worse, and you have that at 13 years old. Now, if you walked into some wealthy person's house and you asked them at 13 years old for stewardship, you said, please, would you be willing to give me stewardship of your $10 million investment portfolio? They might be disinclined to say yes, because it would be hard for them to know how could they be confident that you would actually be able to deliver value. But you could develop a skill very simply with good self-study through of something like bookkeeping. And business owners hire bookkeepers all the time. You learn how to use QuickBooks, get the program, you go down and you get a book from the library on how to use QuickBooks, or you buy a book on QuickBooks, and then you start working with local family and friends. So if you can find a family business that you can work in, that's an ideal thing. If you can find some friends of businesses, maybe some parents of your friends who have small businesses, and you're looking for small businesses, and you can start to say, hey, I'm building a bookkeeping business. And the key is to find somebody who'd be willing to train you. So I would look to see if there's a connection with an accountant or with a bookkeeper who's already established that you can work with them. And if you can work with them as an intern, that starts to help you to build financial skills of bookkeeping. Once you're competent, there's no reason why you can't hire yourself out as a bookkeeper, and there's no reason whatsoever why you can't do that from an early age. The problem with starting work in your teen years is you have to figure out how to get around the child labor laws. So there's all these stupid child labor laws that keep teenagers from working, and the answer, the way to get around them, is self-employment. You can work for yourself and you can run your own business. It's the same answer that problem that people like illegal immigrants face. They can't get a job because they don't have a social security number, and they can't get a fake one for whatever reason, or the company won't accept it. Well, the answer there is self-employment. You start your own business. And so you could start something like a bookkeeping business, and that gets you around the topic of finance. If you find that it's a good fit for you, then a bookkeeping business could lead very easily to an accounting business. And one of the great things about an accounting business is it's very technical, it's pretty easily learned, and people would find it relatively simple to place their confidence in you if you can demonstrate your competence. The way that I would get into the accounting business would be twofold. I don't think you'll be able to do this yet, but for someone who's a little bit older, if you can find a seasonal company like an H&R Block, something like that, you can get a job there, and you can get that with very minimal qualifications, with basic experience, prove basic competency. And that will start to factor in as the experience requirements that you need if you're going to sit for something like the CPA exam down the road. But the other way that I would go is I would search for, again, find a local accountant, ask your parents if they know people. Your parents may be involved in a local community service organization, something like a Kiwanis Club or a Rotary Club, something like that. They may be involved, there may be somebody in your church. If you go to a part of a church, usually there'll be a few accountants in many normal sizes churches. If not, you might have to start from scratch and try to find a place where you can intern underneath an accountant. And along the way, you can start studying for your enrolled agent certification. And the enrolled agent program is the best way for you to, that I know of, best way that I know of for you to be able to start to build your own tax practice. And you don't need the experience requirements that you need from the CPA. You don't need some of the educational requirements that you need from the CPA, but you're authorized to practice before the IRS and to represent clients before the IRS with an enrolled agent designation. The enrolled agent designation is a federal basically a series of exams. So you get a book and you study it and you learn the material. And I'm not aware of any reason why you couldn't at 15 years old have a tax practice of your own and a bookkeeping practice of your own and be able to serve your clients very, very competently. The great thing about your age is you can do this very informally and nobody will be offended by your working out of your house. Nobody will be offended by your not having an office. You can do this with very low expense. It's just a matter of marketing your services. Then from then on, I would start to look at insurance. And insurance is going to be the simplest and easiest way for you to start to move from the world of accounting into the world of financial advice. And so I would consider getting a life insurance license, a life insurance and a health insurance license, and try to find a local agency that with whom you can contract as the general agency to start to do a little bit of life insurance business. I'm not aware of any reason why a young person can't have an insurance license. There may be in your state some requirement that you have to be 18, but I'm not aware of that. So you would need to research that. If you find yourself blocked, no problem. Just adjust, and just this is what I can't stand licensing schemes. I can't stand licensing schemes because basically all licensing schemes serve exclusively to protect the cabal of people who are already established and already in the business. That's why licensing schemes exist. So it's designed to keep people like you out. So if you find an age thing, you find a reason why you can't be licensed, then you got to find a workaround and you got to figure out how can I adjust and how can I offer a product that will help people. A good person that you should look at and that you should research would be somebody like Caleb Maddox. I think his name is spelled M-A-D-D-I-X. But he's a young man. He's, I think, 15 years old now, something like that. But he's been working as a motivational speaker since he was about 11 or 12 years old. You can find his website. He wrote a book that was basically called Success for Kids. And for the last couple of year, you know, for the last few years, he's been building a business where he's been serving and working as a success coach for kids. And I don't remember his exact age, but it's something like 15 years old. But he earns in excess of six figures a year. I would guess much more at this point in time because he's done such a great job with his business. But he's doing a tremendous job of building a business serving kids with success coaching. You could do the same type of thing in an area of personal finance. You could do something like that, where you developed a financial course or a financial seminar to teach other young men and women how to handle their money, and you did it from a unique age perspective of your own age. The other thing that you can do is you go and you pivot and you go into a place where there's no licensing required. So my go-to example here is Social Security planning. There's no reason why you have to be a certain age in order to build a business working as a Social Security consultant. I'm not aware of any licensing that needs to be done. I'm not aware of any board of requirements. I'm not aware of any age of anything to market yourself as a Social Security consultant. All you need is knowledge, expertise, and a good marketing plan. And so if you, for example, let's say that you wanted to build a business working as a financial advisor, but you found that, you know, the Merrill Lynch guy's not going to hire you, the local financial advisor doesn't think you can sell investments, you could build in the coming 5 years, you could build a tremendous knowledge and it'd be of tremendous service in learning how to do Social Security planning. All you got to do is read a half a dozen or a dozen books, carefully look at them, carefully study the material, and then you've put yourself from a novice into the position of an expert and you could give advice. And you could build a business where you provided Social Security consultation for people who were in their 50s, their 60s, who were heading towards retirement. You can provide a consultation which would be well worth $200, $300, $400 for an hour consultation that would help them figure out how what Social Security filing strategy they should implement. So that's kind of – those are some of the ideas that I would start with, because you're going to face tremendous discrimination because of your age in the mainstream world. One of the unfortunate things about being a motivated young man is you're going to face ageism, age discrimination based upon being young. So whenever you face discrimination, the secret is pivot and try to figure out how to go in another route. And this is what black people and women, when black people and women have faced lots of discrimination in the past, the way that they were successful through it was to pivot and don't take it head on. So there were many women writers who were fantastic writers, but they would write under a male pen name. And they would just simply publish their work using a man's name instead. There were many black people who would face discrimination based upon their color of their skin if somebody found out that they were black, but all they needed to do was to figure out a way to conceal that. And so for you, it'd be the same kind of thing. You could develop skill as a Social Security consultant, as an example. And you could do that primarily through written content and consulting, and that minimizes the need for people to see your face. And I mean, you could go all kinds of crazy with this. I have software that I could use very easily to change your voice, and so you could develop a more bassy voice that sounds more appropriate. The two things that you got to watch out for as a young man is, number one, the tone of your voice can sound very young, and the cadence of your speech. So, but you can practice and change the cadence of your speech, and you can use digital equipment to change the tone of your voice. So all of these problems are surmountable, but those are just a long list of ideas of things that would be, if you were my son, those would be the first areas that I would be encouraging you to focus on.
Wow, that's really cool. Never thought of any of that.
Yeah, the key thing I would say is, of course, your primary focus at this point in time should be knocking out your academics, and you're obviously very focused on that. So focus on knocking out your academics. But to get into the financial business, you want to just start getting close to it with whatever you can find. So it's a whole lot easier for you to go the path that I've said, such as bookkeeper, accountant, consultant, move into insurance, and then move into, if you find it's a good fit for you, if you find the skills that are helpful, then you find it's a good fit for you, then at that point in time, go ahead and move on to something like trying to figure out how to get a certified financial planner designation or whatever it is that exists 5 years from now. The problem with the CFP board or financial advisor world is they're going to have to get hired by most financial advisors. I don't know if there's an age requirement to have a securities license. You would have to research that. But the major problem is, who do you work with and how do you build confidence in somebody? And that's the problem with the technical financial advisor space. The technical financial advisor space involves the fact that you're going to be governed by securities laws. And in securities laws, you can't do the marketing of something like I've demonstrated. You have to do in-person solicitation generally. So if you're going to do in-person solicitation, that stacks the deck against you. Now, all of a sudden, you're trying to say to as a 13 or 15-year-old, you're trying to say, hey, give me your $10 million. You've got no track record, and you can't prove a specific skill. So focus on something that you can prove a specific skill in, and also focus on building some way that you can market yourself as an expert. First, you become an expert. Then you market yourself as an expert. And when you can market yourself as an expert, then the discrimination that you face because of your age will start to melt away. And people's initial response of, ooh, this guy's super young, turns into, wow, this guy's fantastic. That would be the encouragement I would give. Finally, my other encouragement for you, Zach, is this. There's no reason why you can't, if you're really interested in investing, not just helping people with money, like if you're really into investing, there's no reason why in the next 5 years you can't become a phenomenal investor and become a phenomenally knowledgeable person. There's a man who writes by the name of Joshua Kennan. His website is Joshua Kennan, KENNON.com. He's now, I think, in his late 20s or early 30s, but he was somebody who, during his middle teenage years, early and middle teenagers years, he was obsessed with investing. And again, back to that ageism, how to overcome ageism, he was writing, he is the columnist or the writer for the New York, the website About, which is owned, I think, by the New York Times, for their personal finance and their money and investing section. And he's written, you know, tens of thousands of articles publicly, and he's a world-class expert. He is financially independent through his own businesses and through his own personal finance prowess, his own investing prowess. And he did that all during a time when he looked very young and he sounded very young. But he played to his strengths. He never tried to go out and focus on speaking in public. What he focused on was applying what he learned with his own investment portfolio, building businesses that didn't require him to be public-facing, and writing, in which it's the quality of your writing and the quality of your ideas that made the difference. So he would be another person that you could look at and research some of his early years. On his blog, he used to have more personal information. He recently started an investing fund, and so he doesn't have much of the personal information on his blog anymore, but he has a very interesting story. Any other questions, Zach? Did that spark anything or anything else you want to ask me before I go on?
I think that's it. Thanks.
Keep up the great work. It's so encouraging to me to get a call from somebody like you. So keep up the great work, I think, and keep in touch. We want to keep hearing what's going on. Let's go to John in Pittsburgh. Welcome to the show. Let me know how I can serve you today, please.
Yeah, hi, Joshua. I'm not sure how to follow that one. Sounds like
yeah, it makes you feel like a loser, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does.
I feel like a loser.
Yeah. It sounds like he'll be all right. Well, I have probably a simple question just on how to do some simple calculations, I think, related to an income plan.
Okay.
So I've been trying to lay out just a kind of a forward-looking set of numbers on a spreadsheet, and what I did was very simply just set out different buckets of assets according to essentially how they're taxed. You know, it's some taxable investments, 401k, Roth IRA, and traditional IRAs. And I just tried to project them along with my age looking into the future with some simple assumptions.
Okay.
And I also did a you know, cost of living per year reduction. And I only did some simple modifications to the numbers, and I'm wondering where I may have gone wrong mathematically, because the projections didn't match. I guess they were better than I expected. So all I simply did was I took an inflation rate on my cost of living each year. I think I looked it up and it came out with something like 3.18%. So I just did that every year. It sounded like a reasonable number to use that I just found on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And
if it's on the internet, it must be true.
Yeah, right. for the other accounts, as far as their growth, before I started, you know, subtracting the yearly income that I'd need to take from various buckets, I just increased their value at 7%. Might have been a little bit high. Maybe that's why it was better than I expected, but I didn't think I should grow those only at 4%, because I thought that was kind of double hedging the inflation. You know, most people say chop 3 or 4% off for inflation, but I think if I did that with the increased cost of living, I don't need to do that over in the other buckets for their growth. It's probably pretty hard to answer a question like that over spreadsheets. I'm just kind of wondering if there's any template to use or anything.
Why do you think that you don't have too much money? Like, why do you think that the numbers aren't accurate?
Well, going back to probably another bad rule to use all the time, but if I use the 4% rule, you know, I think I probably need to build up more than I have, and maybe that just doesn't take into account what I've been able to do on the spreadsheet, which is to, you know, wisely, in quotes, I've been able to draw from different buckets at different times when they're more advantageous. And this is before getting into anything more complicated like a conversion ladder or anything. This is just straight taking from buckets where it seems appropriate. But it got me out to, I think if I calculated the two areas where I just took the most drastic measures of a 10% penalty on the tax, on the taxable buckets, I still got myself out to like age 95, and that kind of surprised me, I guess. And maybe it's just because I used a pretty aggressive 7% growth number. I don't know if that's aggressive or not. I guess I'm just kind of playing around and using numbers I've heard other people say.
Okay. So it's a hard question, obviously, to answer in an audio format like this. I can't answer the question. I can't see the spreadsheet. So it's hard to know. If you'd like to talk more about it, we could do, you know, you could set up a consulting call. If any listener ever wants to just talk to me personally, you can always set up a phone call with me at radicalpersonalfinance.com/phone call. Those are paid consulting calls, but that's a pretty simple thing to do. radicalpersonalfinance.com/phone call. So, obviously I can't analyze the spreadsheet or anything like that. Here would be how I would approach it, though, John. How many years between now and when you were trying to calculate your retirement plans? Was this within the next 10 years or 10 years out?
It was starting to withdraw within 4 years, okay. 4 or 5 years.
If you're in the place where you're starting to withdraw within 4 or 5 years, then yes, you need to get more precise with your calculations. And so your precision in the financial planning situation, a spreadsheet is not going to give you anything more than, you know, what I can do with my financial calculator pretty easily. And that's just to say, okay, if I did have a 7% growth, and if we did have a 3% inflation rate, then we just simply figure out what the inflation adjusted return is, and then we grow the money and figure out how the money's going to come out. But all you're going to get from that is a number. And the reason it won't be perfectly accurate is because your returns are not going to be perfectly consistent and perfectly accurate. So you can't really do any solid stress testing of it. We're just kind of figuring out, are we in the right ballpark? In that context, that's why something like the 4% rule, and the 4% rule is the idea that if you have a portfolio that's made up of largely stocks, then you can withdraw from that portfolio. If the future is like the past in some way, you know, pretty similar way, you can withdraw from that portfolio about 4% per year of its value, adjusted for inflation, and you can do that for at least 30 years, basically into perpetuity. So that's the fundamental, that's the 4% rule. That's as good as anything you're going to get with a spreadsheet to get you in the direction of knowing, do I have enough money saved? If you want to get beyond that, you need to talk to a financial planner if you want to do things like, do your own Monte Carlo analysis or have them kind of vary in a little bit more than that. I guess you can use, you know, FireCalc, right? Isn't that one of the free ones? FireCalc will work on and help you. You can try FireCalc. I've never played with it myself, but I know that's really popular in the do-it-yourself community. But you're not going to get any better results. And at the end of the day, you're basically, when you're projecting, when you're projecting a long retirement, because you are, you know, you're not a traditional 65-year-old retiree. When you're projecting a long retirement, you're basically taking a guess. And you're saying, yeah, I think I've got enough money, whether it's based upon the 4% rule or anything. You're going to guess based upon the academic research and say, yes, I think it's going to last forever. I think I'll be okay. And then you're going to watch it as time goes on. And you're going to watch it and see what your spending is. You're going to see what your income is. You're going to see how much you actually need to take out. And you're going to need to crunch those numbers. At the end of the day, you're not going to get any better than a guess. And you can make an educated guess, but it's just going to be a guess. And a spreadsheet, you know, in many ways can give you a false confidence. A spreadsheet may not give you what you want. So, I mean, I can't. to me, I don't know if your calculations were right or not right, but 4% rule is as good a place to start as any. If you want to be super, super confident, and you can go on dividend rates and say, how can I live on dividends? But at the end of the day, you're just going to have a guess, and you're going to watch it as time goes on. And you're going to tighten your belt when your portfolio's down. And as I am convinced, I mean, you're not going to quit and not be working. If you are going to quit and not be working, then you're going to want to be confident that your portfolio is large enough. So you're going to be earning income from time to time. And at the end of the day, I think your confidence is going to come from the size of the portfolio, recognizing that you've got plenty of money to make changes, and then you just go for it and see, because you don't know what you can't predict 50 years. You can't model 50 years, and there's no way that the financial industry, even if you sit down with an advisor and they do a beautiful Monte Carlo simulation, there's no way that the financial advisor industry can model 50 years accurately. I mean, the world in 50 years is going to be so different. So at the end of the day, you're saying, I think I'm probably good to go. I've got quality investments. I'm a smart guy. I'm a good saver. And I can make it. I don't see any other option other than that. There's probably some things in the early retirement community. I would reach out to, if I were you, I would take this question to Doug Nordman or some of the other guys that are very active in the early retirement who are actually retiring. Those are the guys that I would take this question to and see. And there are forums, there are communities of people that'll take a look at your spreadsheet. Try the Money Mustache community. I forget the name of it, but there's another forum that the early retirees hang out in. Put your spreadsheet in there, put your scenarios in there, and they'll give you feedback. But at the end of the day, I think it's just an educated guess.
No, that's helpful, and I think that's probably what I need to hear, because my primary reason for wanting to do that wasn't necessarily to say, okay, yeah, I'm definitely good in, you know, for a number of years. I really wanted to see how that whatever answer I came up with changed over the next few years as, you know, the market goes up or more than likely down. And I wanted to see how far it pushed out forward or backwards. So that was my main motivation for doing it, but I didn't want to enter in with a incorrect, you know, like you said, guessing model into that, you know, as I go forward. So I was trying to kind of work out the bugs. But that's a good idea to ask the forums, and maybe a coaching call would be a good idea to get it shaken out.
Yeah, be happy to do that. And the forums are great, because the forums do a great job of having people who are actually doing it, who are going to get the lifestyle, who are going to get what you're going for. They're going to understand what you're trying to accomplish. I mean, one of the best things that happens about the world we live in is easy access to other people, like-minded people in forums, specialized forums who can help you. So let me know if I can help you more in the future. Let's go to, I got a 619 phone number from San Diego, California. Let me know who you are, and let's see how I can serve you today, please. If I had a producer, this would be great. Let's try again. 619 phone number, San Diego, California. Who's that? Well, hey, if it happens on live radio, it can happen on my podcast. All right, that's it. I thought we had one more call, but I think that's it for today's show. Thank you all for listening to the Q&A call. How's that for a diversity of even two questions, but two super interesting questions? Hopefully there was some ideas to spark your creativity. You know, I am so passionate about, I probably showed pretty obviously, but I am so passionate about people like that 13-year-old young man. He's got such an awesome opportunity. And it's easy to kind of, I think it's important not to put too much pressure on people, but I do want to just show the opportunities. I mean, if you look at what someone, now Caleb Maddox is one of a kind, but you look at what he's been able to do. I need to see if I can get him on the show. You look at what he's been able to do, he'll blow your brain from what you and I thought we could do when we were younger. That's it for listening. Thank you all so much for being here. I would love it if you'd like to participate in a call like this in the future. Number one, this one was sent out to the email list. So join us on the email list. You can sign up for that at radicalpersonalfinance.com. Jump into the Facebook group. That community group is over 1,000 people now and lots of people interacting there. I'm pretty accessible there. So jump into the Radical Personal Finance Facebook group. And thank you to those of you who have been sending in your pictures and your voicemails. I'm starting to get voicemails. I've been getting a bunch of voicemails. Thank you so much. If you're not aware of it, I'd love you to just, if you're listening to the show, if you wouldn't mind, send me a picture of yourself or your family. I'm making just a screensaver that I can look at it. I like that, and it helps me to be able to see who my audience is instead of just staring at a microphone. And then more importantly, for episode 500, I want to do a show just kind of profiling the changes that you've made in your life. So if over the last couple of years, if it's been since listening to Radical Personal Finance, that's really cool, of course. But if over the last few years you've been making progress, you've learned something, do me a favor, pull out your cell phone, record a quick little voice memo of about 2 to 3 minutes and tell us what's happened. Radical Personal Finance is not for the elite. Radical Personal Finance is for you and me. And so I want to make sure that I profile real stories from real people, and that means you. So grab your phone, record a voice memo, 2 or 3 minutes. Tell us what you've learned on Radical Personal Finance and the changes that you've made in your life. Email that to me, joshua@radicalpersonalfinance.com, joshua@radicalpersonalfinance.com, and I'll be back with you 5 a.m. Monday morning. This show is part of the Radical Life Media Network of podcasts and resources. Find out more at radicallifemedia.com.
Mother's Day is almost here, and you can get her the most beautiful time-tested gift around. A watch she can wear every day for Movement. Whether mom's into classic dress watches, rare and refined ceramics, or tried-and-true bestsellers, Movement has something she'll love. And right now, you can save big on the best Mother's Day gift ever with up to 50% off site-wide during Movement's Mother's Day sale at MVMT.com. Again, that's up to 50% off at MVMT.com.